Welcome to the weekly Dharma Talk podcast from the Columbus Karma Taksum Choling Buddhist Meditation Center. This week's talk, given by meditation instructor Jim Dunn, is entitled Authentic Freedom and is the seventh in our series of talks based on the book Interconnected, Embracing Life in Our Global Society by His Holiness the 17th Jawang Karmapa. What do we mean by freedom? Is it getting what we want? Doing what we want? Or is it something more? We examine these questions and discover that because of our interconnectedness with all things, freedom comes first from within, not from external circumstances. A happy mind, an unencumbered mind, is free from anxiety and can therefore respond with true freedom to whatever we meet in life. So the cultivation of a peaceful mind is the first step to authentic freedom. If you like our Dharma Talk series, please consider donating to Columbus Karma Taksum Choling at columbusktc.org. Enjoy the podcast.
Good morning. Nice to see people here on a sunny day. And today we're going to continue on with the book, Interconnected, by His Holiness the Karmapa. I think this is talk number 7, so we usually begin with the refuge prayer, so I guess everybody has a copy of it now, so if we could all recite that 3 times, then we can begin the talk and get underway. Sanjay Shodong Shuk Ki Chok Nam La Cheng Rup Ardu Dak Ni Kyapsu Chi Dak Gi Jen Sok Gi Pe So Nam Ki Dro La Pencher Sanjay Dru Par Shok Sanjay Shodong Shok Ki Chok Nam La Cheng Rup Ardu Dak Ni Kyapsu Chi Dak Ji Jen Sok Ji Pe So Nam Ki Dro La Pen Shur Sanjay Dru Par Shok Sanjay Chodong Shok Hi Chok Nam La Cheng Rup Ardu Dak Ni Kyapsu Chi Dak Chi Chen Sok Chi Pe So Nam Ki Dro La Pen Shur Chung Je Dru Par Shok. So, yeah, authentic freedom is the topic today from the book Interconnected, Embracing Life in Our Global Society by the 17th Karmapa, Ojin Trinley Dorje. This is chapter 7 today. The first 6 chapters, just quick review, began with just cultivating a sense of interconnection. Was Marcus Casey was the first talk on this, kind of getting oriented to the book and going over it. The second talk on technology, loneliness, gratitude, the kindness of others, and really pointing out how interconnected we are with the internet, how the connections of society, and might have to say a little more about that today. Then being an interdependent individual, which in some ways kind of duplicates today's talk, where we're talking about how interdependent we are and how connected we are and how that gives us some sense of self-reliance and confidence and yet engages us with other people. Then Equality and Diversity was a talk by Marcus Casey. Our Century of Sharing, Our World is Interconnected in a Way Never Before Seen. And then Empathy and Courageous Compassion was a talk given by Eric. And then I guess last week Eric talked about opening heart and mind, building our own responsibility for the way we respond to life's challenges is key to happiness in ourselves and others. So that kind of brings us up to date, more or less. I'm not sure how many people were here for all the talks, or some of them. Or have many of you read the book at all? One's read the book. I have to be more careful. I can't make things up. It is a good book. It is very much worth reading and kind of contemplating, although a lot of it seems kind of obvious to me, too. I think a lot of us really are aware of this, but it's really good to have it pointed out and deepened. And what the Karmapa is after in this is not just understanding how interconnected we are, but feeling a deep sense of connection with one another, with our society, with our world, with our environment. And that really is the underlying issue, is just being fully present and alive in the world. He begins by asking, what do we mean by freedom? And that is an important thing, because freedom is one of those slippery words. You know, we can talk about being free from responsibilities, duties, not having to do stuff. We can talk about being free to do whatever we want, do anything like that. And that's not quite what he's getting at. Freedom is much more than just the ability to do what we please. And it does really involve some limitations on us in a way that you may not think of as being free, but actually they are. Because we are interdependent, we're not exempt from interdependence, so we will always have some limitations on us. And the question is how are we free in the context of the responsibilities we have to one another, to our friends, to our families, to our jobs, to just simply the society we live in, following the traffic laws, things like that. You know, you might think it's an impingement on my freedom that I can't walk when the sign says don't walk. And in a way it is, if there's no traffic coming. But on the other hand, we've kind of agreed that if we follow those things, we'll all be a little safer and a little better off. It may not matter to you if you get hit by a car, but it really upset the day of the guy that hit you. So we need to go a little deeper into what we mean by freedom. You know, freedom is not, as some people might think about it, a zero-sum game. Does everybody know what that means? It comes from game theory. And a zero-sum game is one where if I win, you lose. There's like a set number in there, 10, say 10 points. And if I get 6, then you can only have 4. If you get 6, I can only have 4. And this is not what freedom is. Freedom is a way that we can all win and come out ahead to be a little freer, a little better. So only freedom developed on the basis of a realistic view of who we are and how we relate to others can be authentic and extended to all. If we acknowledge our interdependence and can take into account the vast networks of connections in which our lives are embedded, we will find out that our freedom is inseparable from that of others. Freedom doesn't start on the outside. Authentic freedom really is an inside job. His Holiness says that most often when we speak of freedom, what we are talking about are its outer manifestations. But the single most important determinant of authentic freedom is our minds. No matter how challenging our external conditions might be, we can experience freedom if we cultivate the inner resources that allow us to be free. The basis is establishing authentic freedom within us. When we have freed our minds and hearts from within, our happiness is no longer depends on making the rest of the world serve our self-centered goals. Maybe at the bottom of it all, the freedom we seek is the experience of genuine happiness. If we feel free, we feel happy. If we feel happy, we feel free. And I thought that was interesting, the way he's kind of equating the two. It's a little different than the way I've always thought about freedom. But I think it's right. I think that's a good insight to have, that feeling free is feeling happy, unencumbered, being with the flow of things. So we need to cultivate the inner conditions that arise from that state of feeling happy or feeling free. If we try to define freedom as disentangling ourselves from all of our connections, responsibilities, and everything, that moment will never come. We'll never be really free that way. So we really do live in an interconnected world, and we are obligated in various ways to our families, our friends, everyone else, as I've mentioned. The Tibetan term for freedom, as I thought was an interesting one, literally it translates as self-control or self-mastery. Tibetan saying, being in control of oneself is happiness. Being controlled by what is other is suffering. And I really thought that was an interesting insight and a very good way to think about freedom, is really being in charge of yourself. You know, one of my favorite books is by Sakang Mimpam, Turning the Mind into an Ally. I just love the title, because often our minds are our own worst enemies. You know, somebody once quipped, I hate to go into my mind. It's like going into a bad neighborhood. I don't want to be there alone. But as we work with our practices and work with our minds, then our mind really does become an ally, and we really have some sense of self-mastery. And that really is kind of what this is all about. All the forms of being overpowered by other people, other forces, external or internal, are sources of suffering. And we have to consider these internal ones as well as external constraints. We all know how unfree we feel when we're kind of caught up in things like anger or resentment or jealousy, how they really impinge on the way we think and what we can do. And that is really a source of limitation that stops our really sense of being free, is all these afflictive emotions. You know, we talk about the cause of suffering, as greed, hatred, and delusion, the three poisons. As you get wrapped up in all of those, they really limit our sense of freedom, our happiness. So we learn to get over those, let those go, and work with our minds, then we can really have a more sense of freedom. He also talks a little bit about one of the examples he gives is one that's, I think, is somewhat insightful, sort of obvious in a way. If somebody is beating somebody with a stick, you really don't blame the stick. The stick is the instrument of it. But the person beating you is the one that's actually doing it. But maybe the person's doing it is the victim of his own anger, rage, resentment. So kind of the question, how far back you go. I remember a little Sufi story that when something like somebody was kind of saw a man going off to be executed, and the commentary on that was that this is somehow not right. Was it the man who actually did the killing? Was it the knife he used? Was it the person that made the knife? Was the person that mined the steel? Where does it begin? All of this is interrelated, and it's kind of interesting to think about how entwined we are in this. We gain freedom by actively training ourselves. This can be hard work, but consciously cultivated, our intelligence is a powerful tool, and apply it with wisdom and patience to understand how our destructive emotions work so we can gradually liberate ourselves from their dictates. And often in Buddhism, we talk a lot about meditating, letting go of all thoughts, of not thinking. And yet a lot of the teachings really require that we do a lot of thought, a lot of investigating, of really looking at what's going on in our minds, looking at our emotions, our feelings, how they affect us, how we can liberate ourselves from them. It's much more of an investigative thing as just simply sitting and meditating and letting go of all thoughts. And I know a lot of people say, I can't meditate because I can't stop thinking. But if you learn to think more wisely and with discernment, a little more freely, then thought can be a very powerful tool, becoming liberated. So applying wisdom and patience to understand how the destructive emotions work, we will be able to gradually liberate ourselves from their dictates. And all of us here are really taking the first step being present here, reflecting a little bit on how our emotions work, meditating, being part of a sangha, showing up here on Sundays, hopefully developing a daily practice at home, at least thinking about these kinds of things and how they control you. If you enter into dialogue with them and get them to release their hold on you, you really don't need to do their bidding. You're feeling free. You are freeing yourselves from their power over you. There's a little variation on the serenity prayer that I kind of like. Grant me the ability to accept those people I do not like, the courage to change the one I can, and the wisdom to know that that one is myself. And another thing I sometimes think about too is, you know, holding on to the resentments, the anger. You know, there's a story about a couple of Vietnam vets that were prisoners of war, and they run into each other, and one asks the other, "Do you still hate the Vietnamese?" And the other one says, "Yeah, I'll never forgive them." And the first one says, "Then they still have you prisoner, don't they?" It's kind of like the old story of taking poison yourself and expecting your enemy to die. Hanging on to these things is toxic. It does not do us any good. We need to learn to let go of them. So as Karmapa points out, as you feel your anger, you already are its first victim. And self-discipline can be developed joyfully rather than as a burden we impose on ourselves. It can be something we willingly embrace, but this requires mind training. And I know Lama Kathy has talked a lot about mind training, and her book, practically the only book she ever really talks about, is the Lojun Slogans. She talks about other books too, but that is one that she almost always has with her and keeps coming back to. And I think that is an excellent book, an excellent way to practice, and an excellent way to work on taming your mind and becoming liberated. We just need to recognize our minds are big enough and can open wide enough to accept responsibility. We need to talk to our minds, choose wholeheartedly what to do what is what we know is the best thing to do. And I think most of us most of the time really do know what is the right thing to do. It just is that we don't always want to do it. Sometimes it's easier to do something that really we know better. You know, I just got back from Norway last week, and one of the things that struck me in Oslo especially is there's no litter anywhere. People just don't litter. They seem to be raised that way. They're all very neat and clean. The city is clean. And you didn't see an army of people out there cleaning it. And you really didn't see a bunch of trash cans everywhere. So that's just kind of an attitude that they apparently have just cultivated there, that being clean, being neat is a good thing to do, an important thing to do. It makes for a good society. You know, we see litter all the time, over the place here, and it does seem easier when you have a candy bar or a cup of coffee in your car and you're through with it, just to throw it out on the street and let it be just sort of absorbed into the world and contribute to the litter. But we all know that's not really the best thing to do, and yet sometimes we may do it anyway. Certainly, I don't think anybody would say, yeah, just throwing your trash on the ground, that's a good thing. But we do do that. And the Karmapa spends a lot of time in this book, and several of the chapters that I've read, talking about his life, his self, and the constraints on him. You know, as this high personage, and sometimes I think he feels a little uncomfortable with the role, but he has to accept it. You know, he comments he can't just go out and play basketball in the yard. If he did so, that would involve a whole bunch of guards coming out and doing that, clearing the area, making sure it was safe for him. It would really be an big imposition on everyone else. And all the other little limitations. He doesn't have an email account. I guess he has a Facebook page, but he doesn't run it. Somebody else runs it for him. So all these limitations on his freedom, and yet if he opens his mind and accepts what he can do, he's quite content with that. And that's part of what his point is finding contentment, learning to be content with what you do have, learning to be content staying inside and having good conversations with people. So again, inner freedom does not mean the freedom to follow emotional impulses or a temporary sense of relief from restriction, nor does it a matter of some ineffable feeling that comes and goes for no apparent reason. It runs much deeper than that. And sometimes I guess we do want to think somewhat superficially about this stuff, that if I was free, I could just get this wonderful feeling of bliss and be able to float through the world without a problem. And yet life just isn't like that. He gives a lot on his constraints and the limitations on his freedoms. But the wise application of intelligence allows him to see he's not confined to just one possibility. And we all have that. If we just look patiently, there's a number of possibilities we have of what we can do, what we're about, the choices we make. We may not be able to go swimming today, but a lot of other nice things we can do. So developing patience, that's one of the six perfections, an important thing to develop, helps us keep the long view, to see beyond desire for instant gratification. Maintaining an open heart and mind helps to stay open to these other choices available. Mentally flexible and able to find contentment and satisfaction in what we do have and can experience, and not fixating on what's beyond reach. That's a real challenge for a lot of us. Kind of wanting what we don't have and getting fixated on the things that we would like to have or like to have happen to us. And yet, if we really work with patience, work with our minds, and settle down, there's a whole lot of wonderful things we can do, ways we can settle in and be patient with patience and wisdom, with discernment. So freedom helps us appreciate our equality. Freedom, like every other human experience, is carried out in the context of interdependence. Inevitably, it depends and involves many other people. Therefore, we can never validly say that my freedom or happiness is more important than anyone else's. Disregarding others doesn't work. It goes against our basic interdependence. And that's why we need to cultivate it, the habit of contentment, cultivate the habit of contentment, so we can appreciate what we do have rather than focusing on other possibilities. Freedom can be achieved amid interdependence, and it should not be confused with the momentary gratification of our egocentric impulses. Authentic freedom is rooted in understanding and respect for interdependence. So to really understand interdependence, the values of interdependence he lists are the affective and cognitive capacities for discernment, empathy, openness, patience, wisdom, and contentment. These are the values that make true freedom possible. And a lot of this has been talking about the inner qualities of finding freedom. And finding our own freedom is not quite enough, but that's where we have to begin. We really can't work well with finding freedom for others without really becoming aware of the own limitations on our freedom. And here he talks a little bit about liberating others and making sure others are free. And some of the examples he uses are things like sexism. If we haven't gotten over our own sexism, our own prejudices, it's going to be hard for us to work, to liberate, and to make sure that sexism is no longer a part of our society. We have to clean our own house first. We have to work on our own biases, prejudices, limitations that kind of constrain us. So we focus on inner freedom because it is a condition that is often overlooked, but it is the decisive condition allowing us to both protect ourselves against the external forces that limit our own freedom and also be able to fight for the freedom of others. First, we need to liberate our own mind. We need to fight against our own sexism, racism, etc. We are to free our own minds. Otherwise, we might as well perpetuates subtler forms of discrimination. When our own mind is free, we see the basis from which to fight for others. If we do not fight consciously and actively to free our own mind, it can be as if our mind has been invaded and even occupied. Earlier, we discussed the impact of technology and consumerist culture on our lives in a global society. But they also impact our freedom in different ways, and if we aren't consciously aware of how we engage in them. You know, and we've been reading a lot, you know, politically, how the Russians' use of social media impacted the last election, and a lot of that is still going on. ISIS is using social media to recruit members. Various hate groups are doing it very well to recruit new members. So we really need to be aware of that, of how we interact with social media and all the things going on in our world. But he also reminds me of the importance that social media had and positive things, like Arab Spring, liberating some of the Arab countries back in 2011. So it's a complex kind of thing, though, and much to think about here. The consumerist vision of happiness and success is projected so skillfully and consistently, we don't realize it's just one vision. Multinational corporations employ armies of experts to figure out ways to control us. And they really kind of go deep in that. I read someplace that a potato chip company can tell exactly how many pounds per square inch of crunch a potato chip needs to be really satisfactory. I mean, they really go that deep on this stuff and really want to hook you. And yet there is so much to be done. We do share a world with so many people whose external conditions are horrifyingly lacking in freedom. And so that is something we all need to work on and be aware of, and aware of our part in it and what we can do. Once again, as he reminds us frequently, and the Dalai Lama in many of his talks does too, we all share the same fundamental wish for happiness. Everyone wishes to be happy and free from suffering. In an interdependent world, we are responsible to change the external conditions. And that's really all I prepared, but I think there's a lot of interesting stuff here to talk about. So I was hoping that we could have a little bit of dialogue on this idea of freedom and how you feel free and how you can work in the world. So the microphone is over there, and so please feel free. Hi, Tim.
Every time we... Every thought or every word that we utter, every action, we're making a choice, mm-hmm. whether to do it or not to do it, whether to do it for somebody else or do it for us. So that, to me, that's, and I had never thought of it before you started talking, but it occurred to me that that's, we're free to choose. Mm-hmm. We're going to reap a different result, of course, from the result of our choice. Thanks.
Yeah, no, we all do have a choice. And we need to learn how to make them wisely and with discernment. I know some people would argue that our choices are somewhat limited based on our past karma, our past actions, that they kind of direct us. And we certainly have some limitations there in the choices we make. But we usually can really make a choice, and we really can choose to do something wiser. But, you know, that is a good thing to keep in mind.
But we are making those choices, whether we're fully aware of it or not. So.
Yep. That's absolutely every day, every moment. Thank you.
Hi there, Jim. Thank you for your talk today.
Hi, Josh.
I don't want to go into this piece, but there's another piece. I spoke to a political philosophy professor at Capital University recently, and he mentioned that Americans get really caught up on liberty and freedom and blend them together, and they're two different things, so we have to watch that. That's all I'll say for that. But As far as Buddhism goes, I know that the freedom comes from the spiritual experience, learning, practice, educating ourselves, practicing more, and eventually we get to a point where whatever's happening around us doesn't affect us so much or at all on a really good day. And I know yesterday at work, there are a lot of sick and confused people at my job, and it was out of control, and we're in a room, and it was just going bonkers, and one person actually turned to me and said, "How are you focusing on your work? It's so crazy in here." And I said, "Because I can." And I think that was due to all this practice I've done here, where, you know, they're sick and suffering for whatever for today, and that's it. That's the answer. But I need to get my job done, and I'm going to go do that. But to keep my head clear and go from there has been really a big gift of studying and practicing and meditating. Thank you.
I'm curious, what is the difference between liberty and freedom?
I'm not going to go into it. It's too big.
Too complicated? No, I guess the one thing that should be obvious, but we really need to keep in mind, is we really can't control what happens to us. Stuff will happen. We can respond how we respond to it, how we react to it. And that is the important lesson, I think, of all the Dharma. Is an old Zen teacher was asked, what is the essence of all the teachings that he's learned from his lifetime of practice? And he said, it's an appropriate response. Being able to respond appropriately to whatever comes up. So, but I think that's an important thing to have. Hi.
Hi, I'd like to thank you. I'm not from here, I'm from White Plains, New York, and my sister was nice enough to bring me here today. Oh. And you stimulated a lot of thoughts in me, and I didn't want to get up, but I think I can contribute something.
Sure.
Freedom and liberty. I look at it, I think one comes from the outside by being given permission to do something. The other comes from inside, from the way through, the way that we are trained. And I think there's a connection. And I used to believe in a lot in choice. I think there's not such thing as choice, because that creates a lot of dualities in our society, and it gives us the permission to think that we are in control, but actually freedom doesn't come from choice. Freedom comes from following the path of insight, awareness, and compassion. And if once you follow that path, there is no choice. You have the actions that come out of you don't come out of a choice, comes out of an awareness. So choice to me was very important until I realized that these create these separations and dualities among us. So our choice is better than yours. You know, I'm following the right path, you're not. So there is a path, there is a way, and that is what determines which direction we take. And it doesn't come from this or that.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah. No, that is an interesting way to look at it. And I know it's said that some of the bodhisattvas, the enlightened arahants in tradition, really don't make choices that are wrong. They always know the right thing. They do the right thing. Automatically, it doesn't occur to them to do something else. Not unlike the way the Norwegians respond, that just doesn't seem to occur to them that they could litter. But getting there, on the way there, we have choices, and we can learn to make better choices, more skillful choices. I think that's kind of starting where you are. You can get to a point where you don't even need to think. You just need to be in the habit of making the right choice. I saw recently that somebody had defined character as habitually doing the right thing. A person with good character just is a person that does the right thing out of habit. So, yeah, no, I think you can get there. I think that's part of the idea of the goal. But along the way, I think we do need to consider what we're doing. We do have choices. And some of us, you know, need to think a little bit more about the choices we make than some of the ones that are a little more advanced on the path. But that is an interesting point. Thank you. Anyone else?
Hi.
Hi.
So I thought it was really interesting what you said about how holding anger is only toxic to ourselves. And I think I personally get frustrated because I can realize that point, and then I realize it, but it doesn't change anything. I'm still angry and I know it's hurting me. So I guess my question would be, does it just take practice and meditation? Because it doesn't feel like freedom to realize that. It feels like a trap and like I can't do anything.
Well, it does take practice and some insight. You know, the insight that you're not doing yourself any good by feeling angry is a good start, a good beginning. If you're getting caught up in angry thoughts, actually the Buddha had some techniques for dealing with that. If it's having a lot of angry thoughts about something, you can try replacing them with another thought. If that doesn't work, you can just try to say, let it go, I'm going to ignore that, I'm not going to think about that. And I even had something here that kind of relates to that. Just kind of examine it. This is not a skillful thought. Just look at it that way. This is not doing me any good. Think about the thought, what it's doing for you. And maybe just try to let it go, relax. And if those don't work, then finally, the Buddha in his wisdom recommends that, this is a quote from the Buddha, just as a strong man seizing a weaker man by the head or throat or shoulders would beat him down, constrain and crush him, in the same way, if evil, unskillful thoughts connected with desire, aversion, or delusion still arise in the mind while he is attending to relaxing the thought fabrications with regard to those thoughts, then with his teeth clenched, his tongue pressed against the roof of his mouth, he should beat down, constrain, and crush his mind with awareness. As with his teeth clenched and his tongue pressed against the roof of his mouth, he is beating down, constraining, and crushing his mind with awareness, those evil, unskillful thoughts are abandoned and subside. With their abandoning, he steadies his mind right within, settles it, unifies it, and concentrates it. So the Buddha doesn't play games with some of this stuff. He gets pretty stern on it.
Yeah, it sounds violent.
But I always got a kick out of that passage because it sounds so unlike the Buddha. And yet it is definitely part of his teaching. So, you know, you just work with that. But keep on practicing and keep looking at these thoughts, examining them. And then maybe examine, you know, what's the source of your anger? Why are you really angry? Sometimes I find myself, I'm angry about something, but actually the reason I'm angry is the other person was doing just basically what they needed to do, and I just wanted something else to happen. You know, part of suffering is not getting what you want and expecting other people to behave in a way that you want, and they don't always do that. And keeping in mind that everybody is usually acting in some way for themselves to be happy and to avoid suffering. It's rarely personal. That's the other place where a lot of us get caught up in this, that we think, you know, that this person is doing something to me. But really, they're just behaving the way they need to behave at this moment. It has nothing to do with you. You know, nobody gets up in the morning and decides, well, today I'm going to do what I can to piss, what's your name?
Emily.
Emily off. I'm just not, nobody does that.
Yeah.
But that may just happen anyway because you want them to do something other than what they want to do. But meanwhile, just keep practicing. Examine some of these things. The meditation practice will definitely help. So, does that help?
Yeah, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Anything else? Well, that's it. We can kind of wind up the dedication of merit. I see we all have a new, more formal dedication of merit that we can recite together at the end. On the back side of the sheet, you all find by your seats. So let's do it in English so we can understand what we're doing. By this merit may all obtain omniscience. May it defeat the enemy wrongdoing from the stormy waves of birth, old age, sickness, and death, from the ocean of samsara. May I free all beings. The courageous Manjushri, who knows everything as it is, Samanta Bhadra, who also knows in the same way, and all the bodhisattvas, that I may follow in their path, I completely dedicate this virtue. And thank you for listening, for being here. Please keep up your practice. And otherwise, enjoy this lovely day. We're getting into my favorite time of year. Not too hot and bright and sunny days. So thank you.
Thank you for joining us for this week's Dharma Talk. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. If you did, please subscribe, rate, and review it on iTunes. To learn more about the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling or to donate to support our Dharma Talk series, please visit our website at columbusktc.org. The opening and closing music for the podcast is Tibetan Flute Song by Tamding Arts at tamdingarts.com. Please join us again next week for another Dharma Talk.